I'm Joe Kane.
I'm Dan Kane.
I'm Sal Conca.
And I'm Wayne Heckler.
And this is the Imperfect Podcast.
Don't forget to go to hecklerkane.com and sign up to be an Imperfect Podcast Insider.
To the bumper. Director, producer, writer, cinematographer, working on the camera department, electrical department, sound department, as an editor and as an actor, our next guest has done it all. Dimmy Nakoff is a filmmaker's filmmaker. This New Zealander is making a big splash in the indie film community. Dimmy is a multi-award-winning filmmaker with a diverse body of work.
Yeah, I gotta say, talking to Dimmy today was really inspiring for us. He was the kickoff to our next season of guests, and it couldn't have been a better way to start off the new season of interviews. I mean, he runs this huge Facebook network for 40,000, almost 40,000 other filmmakers called the Filmmakers Generation Next Network. If you haven't seen that, you gotta get on it. You know, he's filled with inspirational quotes. We talked a lot about mental health and filmmaking, as well as his body of work that he started in music videos. Mm-hmm. He's been all over the place. I mean, from he was born in Bulgaria, I believe.
Yep.
Moved to New Zealand, did some studies there. He couldn't really handle, he didn't like doing undergrad studies. He actually didn't finish his degree. Ends up going to film school, and then he lands in Australia, where we spoke to him today. But yeah, just tons of information from him. He's worked with a lot of people. I think you guys are really going to love the interview. Did you guys feel the same?
Yeah, cool. Absolutely. He was very, you know, excited about his work and getting in touch with other people that are doing work, and he loves what he does. So it was fun to talk to him.
I know Wayne loved the part about his writing process and the techniques and the writing group that he had and his process that he goes through even to his other writing partners and the process he goes through to create and just come up with idea generation. He even talked about working on the Wheel of Fortune, which was fun.
Everybody likes the Wheel of Fortune.
Exactly.
You spin, it's great prizes. Absolutely. Yeah.
Exactly. Well, guys, take a listen to Dimmy and hope you enjoy. Don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel and head over to hecklerkane.com. Dimmy, welcome to the Imperfect Podcast. How are you doing today?
Hi, Dorian. I'm very good. Thank you for having me today.
Yeah, of course. Where are you calling from? You're calling from very far off land.
Yeah, I'm calling from Perth, Western Australia. It's about 9 o'clock in the morning. Thank you for the nice setup and waiting to get so late at your location, you know.
We're exactly 12 hours off from you, and we're upside down.
Yep. Start digging, Dimmy. We'll start digging as soon as possible. I don't need visa. I just need a big shovel.
Exactly.
Excellent.
Exactly. I like that. But yeah, we've told the folks you've done an amazing amount of work in your tenure doing music videos, indie films, short films, some documentary work, and things like that. How did you actually get involved in film? And like, was it a passion of yours since you were a child? Where does it come from?
I didn't realize it until later, but I got involved into images when I was little, like 11, 12 years old. My grandfather, he was a teacher in mathematics, chemistry, physics, but also he was conducting workshops, like photography workshops for his older students, and I was little, you know, back then, and he was inviting me during my stay at the school he was teaching, and it wasn't where I was living in the city. He was teaching back in the village where and my mom and my dad are from. So I was I studied actually 1 or 2 years back in the village, and during those years when I was little, I was sneaking into the workshops, photography workshops, and you can imagine back then in the early 90s, late 80s, you know, that photography was with those manual cameras, you know that very well. Mm-hmm. And he got me actually a camera which belonged to my dad. So it was a Zenit Russian camera, TTL 45, I think. I still have it here. I'll just...
awesome.
Nice. I love when we get tours of equipment. I love it.
Yeah, I still have it here, so I'll show it to you. That's probably great. The first people seen it except me for a long time.
Oh, wow.
So this is the This is nice. the camera I used, and it was. I don't know if it still works. I'm gonna have to go to some of those. If there's places where I can see if it works and put a black and white film and try it and probably screw up a few frames because I haven't used the manual camera most of my life except early those days.
Yeah, sure.
So I was taking photos of my sister and my brother and developing in the dark room with the bigger Russian apparatuses, like huge. I remember they were massive and of course in the dark room we put the film and the photo paper. You take it out of that shiny pouch.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
that keeps it dark and then you put it under the apparatus, and for 3 seconds you put the light on, and then you take it and put it through the developers, the chemicals, and what was amazing, you don't see it with the digital, is that white paper, just like animation, it just starts changing colors, like from different shades of gray and black and white and off-white, and it just becomes that kind of that picture that I took like months ago or weeks or whatever it takes to get to develop the film, and I see how many frames I screw up as well.
It's a beautiful process to get to watch that, and I don't know how many of you guys have ever been in a dark room. It really is something magical when you do get to see that and have the film, you know, you've developed the film, you've put it through the little shaker and the chemicals and the developer and then the stopper, and you put it in all the pieces. It's really magical.
It's unreal, and I guess just because it was early in my developing years as a human being, I guess that stuck imprinted, like that was imprinted on the photo paper, imprinted in my life, in my mind, and somehow stuck with me. I didn't, of course, continue with photography, become like this wunderkind photographer. I went to watch movies like VHS, you know, Bruce Lee and Chuck Norris, and start going with my brother, watching a lot of movies, playing games, and photography kind of faded in the background for a while until later on moved to New Zealand and decided to study film and television in the University of Auckland. So then 2 years later, I didn't even finish the undergraduate. I did 2 years and I could have gone to the third year to have a degree, but I was like B student, B minus, B plus, and to get to graduate with a degree, of course you have to have better marks, and I'm just like I don't know about that theory type of thing. I have trouble reading big passages since I was a kid. I was much more prone to read comics where there's a little bit of text, a little bit of images. My head doesn't hurt, but you know, I decided to go to another school, which is South Seas Film and Television School, 1 year diploma. So I decided to go there. But of course, again, I had to choose between documentary and drama. And of course, I wasn't really into, wasn't a prolific writer or reader in terms of, but I wanted to tell stories. I chose documentary because it fit with me in terms of, I'm good at talking, I talk a lot, and I'm able to get the subjects or my interviewees to relax and start opening a conversation. So plus there is a fair amount of writing. You put like 30-40% into writing into a documentary, and the rest is a fluid evolution of the story, which can take in many directions. So mainly is being able to predisposition the talent to open up and really see how you can go left, right, or up and down with in terms of story. So that was very natural to me, but always wanted to tell stories that are fictional. That's where I grew up with those movies. So that's how I got into film, the long story short, I guess.
Sure. And then I know a lot of your career, too, early on, you were doing a lot of music videos as well. which yeah. you had some very big success with the Devil Skin video and some others. So how did you transition to music videos after starting with documentaries?
I really liked music back when I was in Czech Republic, living there, working in a steel factory. We lived for 5 years, and I, before we went to Czech Republic, I was a DJ in Bulgaria for a few years. I loved music. I'm not a musician, but I love rhythm and I love music. So again, I went with the DJing. And back then, I mean, I didn't pick up the turntable DJing. I was a CDJ and the tapes, mm-hmm. with the tapes. So sure. then in Czech Republic, I got into DJing, and I again and while working in the steel factory. So I always wanted to be involved with music in some way, shape or form. So when I was in New Zealand and finished school, film school, and doing jobs like odd jobs like camera assistant, cabler for rugby games, or production assistant for TV shows and all those things, I decided to do some music videos because they are fun, they are very quick to produce, and you know, if the music, the rhythm of the music grabs me, I will be willing to do it for nothing as well, because I'll get a lot out of it. Plus, building my portfolio with some diverse work was one of my goals as well.
And we can tell how important that is, such as in your short films, which we'll talk about a little bit later, like in Blindside, music is very important to that. But on one other thing, we know that you run the Filmmakers Generation Next Incorporated. Could you tell us a little bit about how that started?
Yeah, that wasn't the idea at the beginning with FGN Inc. I finished film school at South Seas in Auckland in late 2008, and I was like, okay, so we go out. And then I don't know anybody, kind of. I know the classmates, but how do I keep up with them and keep in touch? So I created a group that I can invite them. We can kind of keep in touch with that. And I had something. Oh, this might become something. I didn't know what. I just wanted to be something that it will be a kind of. There always going to be a next generation of filmmakers. That was my idea. It's going to be me, then it's going to be somebody else, then it's going to be somebody else, and it's always going to be a next generation of filmmakers. And I wanted to kind of start it up with that group. Almost a decade later, we got Filmmaker Generation Next is probably in the top three or top five independent filmmaking groups, not pages, mm-hmm. groups. On Facebook, there is probably two or three that are bigger than FGN Inc.
We can get you some publicity with this thing, and you can get something off the ground and get this to number one.
So, how many followers do you have right now? Because you have a pretty decent amount of followers. Members,
on the group,
actually. Members on the group. On the group. The members, I meant. Yes.
The members on the group at the moment are 37,000 plus something.
Nice. Yeah.
I'm one of them.
Yes, just so am I. So am I. I think, Dimmy, the interesting thing about the group, though, is it has an interesting message, right? So your proposition says it's you support equality, diversity, and mental health in film and TV industry for a positive future, changing the world one message at a time. So where did that core mission statement come from? I think, you know, equality and diversity is definitely something we see in a lot of people's messages, right? A lot of the crowdfunding campaigns. The mental health issue, you know, is something that's a little more unique. Is that something that's personal to you in some way?
Yeah. Well, of course, that wasn't the idea from the start, and wasn't even happening. It happens the last few years, predominantly the last year and a half,
mm-hmm.
Because of course, me personally, I was going through a rough patch. You know, nothing was kind of moving the way I wanted to move. Some project got stuck and didn't move forward. And I know that I'm capable of more. I can do more, but nothing was happening. And of course, I know we see a lot about diversity and equality and mental health. Some people might get a little bit kind of, oh, stop blasting us with that in our faces. We just know about, we don't want to see, but it's very important because especially mental health, because that's the first thing that will determine the level of creativity and productivity in our personal, individual, and collective lives. Because mental health, if that declines, creativity and productivity declines. It's equation doesn't break and it doesn't lie. It's there, it's fixed, and it's something that it determines our quality of life personally, professionally. So that's why I decided to. Well, it started very interestingly from collecting quotes. I was just collecting quotes to motivate myself to not get into that that dangerous wheel of self-doubt and fear and spiral down the rabbit hole where it's very difficult to get out and it's very suffocating. So I was collecting quotes for quite a while, a year and a half, and I see from time to time that the folder is just piling up with quotes, and I didn't know what to do. But then I see I have that group, you know, Filmmaker Generation X on Facebook. So I decided, well, I will create something with that. And I saw that Instagram, is massive platform. So I decided to create an Instagram account for FGN Inc. with just the quotes and start posting them there and have some kind of a structure into the account that it's really unique of its own. And the quotes are designed in such a way. So that was the kickstart into creating the blog, which is for a positive future. Mm-hmm. Out of that little account, Instagram account, I created the blog where, because only quotes, it's not enough. It is good and it should be everywhere around us to remind us of certain moments when we have doubts and fears, but it wasn't enough. So I started collecting articles and videos and posted them on that blog for Positive Future to really, really have a little bit more in-depth and profound, positive and motivational messages from all those people that are leaving it for us online to really motivate us, and we willingly ignore them. So I feel really, really guilty about that. Half of my life, I was ignoring all those messages. And they've been left for millennia, for centuries, from people from aristocracies to today's, all those profound thinkers and who achieved personal and professional success.
It's very inspirational. And I know you also have Phoenix Writing Group. What is that about?
That's something that came about the last year and a half again. As I mentioned, I really wasn't really a prolific reader and writer, so I always had that fear that I wasn't good enough in terms of writing my own material. In early stages of my directing, I always kind of directed and produced to somebody. Even if the story was by me, somebody else wrote it because I was like, oh, I'm just not going to be good enough. You know, it's going to be laughable. It's just not going to be good enough. So I decided a year and a half ago to find somebody and get together and start writing, because there's so many ideas that I have, especially in the realm of science fiction, where I want to explore the human condition, the technology that surrounds us, how we could or we will evolve as a species, and the good and the bad side of those of those interactions with the technology and artificial intelligence as well. So I got together with an actress here from Perth, Jean Marcello. who was feeling the same way, that she's an actress first and foremost. She wants to pursue acting. I'm a director first and foremost. I want to pursue directing. And as you know, in the filmmaking or anything in life, there is no straight path, right?
Correct.
Sometimes you have to take left. Sometimes you have to take 2 steps back and 1 step forward.
Correct.
So, well, it's impressive to me just looking at your IMDb. I mean, you have producer credits, writer credits, cinematographer credits, camera department credits, electrical department, sound department, editing credits, and acting credits. So, I mean, there is no straight line. You have to be able to do it all.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, who doesn't? I mean, yeah.
And Joe is very big sci-fi guy.
So I love sci-fi.
How much you like it? Yes.
I was just listening.
So, yeah, we got together and we started writing a year and a half ago, predominantly in sci-fi. At some point, we'll branch out, but we want to really, really master the writing first and foremost in the genre that we really feel passionate about, because that's going to determine our longevity in terms of producing, where we're not getting paid for it. Okay. And of course, that rightfully so, we're not getting paid because we are not to that standard that probably we should be to have a really sustainable careers. But yeah, she's. She saw that Jean saw that potential that through writing, improving her writing and storytelling techniques, she will be a lot more useful or a lot more richer in terms of diverse in terms of talents, where she gets involved with other projects, you know, not only being an actress but being able to help in terms of writing, or and the same with me as a director. It's very important to be able, if I'm not writing a project and I'm directing a project that's written by somebody else, not to be in their way, to be a help, to be able to produce a project more efficiently with the highest quality possible, so I can be actually helpful instead of being a barrier in the development of the project, understanding every aspect of writing and be able to contribute instead of sometimes waiting if there is some schedule conflicts, be able to move things forward, because I know how it is in our world, you know. Mm-hmm. Schedule and timing is very important. Doesn't matter what the budget is, right?
Uh-huh. Of course. Now, I read on the blog that you came up with actually a system of writing. Do you care to talk about that at all?
I saw some exercise called where you take existing intellectual property, let's say Spider-Man. You take the main actors, basically knowing what the main characters, what they do, who they are, with one sentence. You get the genre and the short synopsis of the, and you turn it upside down. Basically, if it's a male character, you make it female. If it's 15 to 20, you make it 50 to 60. If it's a sci-fi, you make it a horror or a comedy. Again, when we are turning projects upside down like this, we try to pick projects that we can turn it up into a sci-fi horror thriller. So we don't go into setting ourselves up in terms of turning it upside down and it's in a genre that we're not going to write. Mm-hmm. So there is a strategy there. So we pick up, let's say, a comedy or something else, or romantic or some. So even sometimes sci-fi, we can turn it up into another sci-fi. So we start with that and we generate ideas that way, and then we kind of look into them and decide which one we want to make, and take that idea and work for a few months on it, starting from scratch, creating a storyline, then some certain scenes, and we start writing it. And we are basically not even chasing any page count, so it can be 15 pages, it can be 35, it can be 50 or 70. At the moment, we have a sci-fi that was based on an idea that I came up with, that is 57 pages, and it looks like it's going to keep growing. So it might end up to be a feature, so we don't know yet what we're going to end up with. So that's kind of roughly the strategy we are getting, not only generating our own ideas. Gene will come up with something like Utopia that has some success interested at the moment in some screen competitions as a short sci-fi, but also we generate ideas that way with, we call it the upside-down generator.
That sounds like fun. Joe, we should take Casablanca and turn it into a sci-fi. What do you think?
I think a horror would be nice.
Oh, Casablanca. It's a horror movie. This is fun. We're gonna give this a shot, I think.
The plane crashes at the end.
I think this would be a fun exercise.
No, it is actually really a great exercise. Is that something you guys came up with on your own?
Exercise, yeah.
Yeah.
And also, if you don't know, let's say to make it even more interesting, what we did is I go on my mobile and go on IMDb and pick up a list of movies that, you know, those lists, mm-hmm. the people mm-hmm. that like movies?
Yeah.
And I scroll down and I just push with my finger and see where it stops. So mm-hmm. it's almost like the Wheel of Fortune. I actually worked as a production assistant on Wheel of Fortune in New Zealand.
Nice.
So I just pick up and then we take that and just develop it, and we have like over 20 ideas at the moment, and we keep coming up with more. Recently, my dog in April died from a disease that is incurable.
Event, sorry to hear that.
To the path to come up with a few more ideas. So it always ideas are everywhere around us. We just have to catch them. Right. We have to seize the opportunity. And there's another reason why I created, I guess, Filmmaker Generation Next and for a Positive Future blog, is because I was asking for opportunities from others and I wasn't creating it myself. So I decided really to create opportunities myself and get out of that dependency of asking for permission or for somebody else to see the potential in me and give me the opportunity. I still, you know, that doesn't mean that we should not ask.
Sure.
I mean, it's absolutely true and essential that we should not be shy of asking for help, because that's one of the moments that you don't know what you're going to get. There's people, so many beautiful and gorgeous people out there that are willing to help because they see mm-hmm. Potential in others. But we should not be waiting for that opportunity to come to us. We should create it and grab it if it comes.
We've skipped over so many monumental points in your career, too. I wanted to talk a bit about, you know, Blindside, one of the short films that was accepted into Cannes. So, you know, the story of Blindside, maybe you can just give our audience a brief synopsis of what Blindside was about, and they can go to your website and watch it, obviously.
Blindside is a short drama thriller that has to do with depicting the mental and physical abuse behind closed doors in middle class type of thing. We have Becky and Amanda, that daughter and mom. Her mom, Amanda, is divorced from her father, John, who is a police officer. And she found a new man in her life, and that new man is very, very sinister and bad. That's where the things start going wrong, and there is nothing anyone can do unless the victim or the person who has experienced that abuse finds a way to speak out. And that's what it is, that mental and physical abuse victims, many of them are thinking that they will be able to fix the problem, to help the other person, or being afraid to speak up because it's embarrassing. It can be embarrassing, can be frightening, can be so many things that we as human beings are afraid of, and it's really a problem that is suffocating in so many ways. So I wanted to tell that story.
Sure.
And we created a short film about it, which luckily got accepted into Cannes.
What was the experience like going to Cannes?
I was fortunate enough that everybody, cast and crew and friends and family, stepped in and helped me to get there in 2012. I luckily was able to stay for the whole duration of the festival, which is professionals go there for the first week or or so I stayed for the whole duration to soak it in, because I knew there won't be too many options at this stage of my career to go there. You know, traveling from New Zealand is like 36 hours or so, you know, so it's and quite expensive. But the experience was unreal, very surreal, seeing all those filmmakers and celebrities. And I came home with 5 kgs more paperwork than I went with in terms of business cards and pamphlets, and went to all the workshops. One thing that I was prepared very well with is I found online a guide for dummies type of thing, that when you go to, before you go to Cannes, a few months before that, you have to start communicating with them and setting up workshops and meetings and all those things, not to wait for the last minute. So I was very prepared with that, and I was busy every single day from morning till late. Luckily, New Zealand Film Commission, they have like a office there close to the festival, so I was able to get in and check my emails. There was Wi-Fi, free Wi-Fi, so it was amazing, really amazing experience. But I didn't party at all. I didn't have time to party.
No time to party. So I know Wayne was getting into what's coming down the pike. I know we've seen on your Twitter account the Ara, right? Ara movie is your sci-fi that you're currently developing. What and that's all about, where I have it here, a multi-reality thought-provoking film. So that's about AR, and you know, so what is that film about? What stage are you in right now with Ara?
Ara is very, very interesting project. Actually, wrote it 2012. Start writing it in 2012, and I shot quite a bit in 2013. Pretty much the whole thing on no budget, with some amazing casting crew from Auckland, New Zealand, and then I tried to finish it in post production, but of course, there is a lot of VFX and a lot of stuff happening, so I'm at the moment, quite a few years after we've shot the film, looking for ways to get it finished. And we have a few options on the table. I seize the moment, and that's one thing that I encourage everyone to who really believe in their projects to really go ahead and don't listen to those little fears that are in the back of our minds that can sometimes do more damage than any good. Of course, that project has been in the pipeline for a long time now, but I still believe there is a way to get it done. It might be one of those utopian projects that might get 10 years or 20 years to get finished. But I've never flinched even for a minute that this is not a possibility, because I really believe in the story. A smart filmmaker would not make a sci-fi with hundreds of VFX as a first feature. Obviously, I'm not one of those smart ones, so that's why I'm stuck with it.
How do you feel about augmented reality now? I mean, with the iPhone X, now augmented reality is in the hands of potentially the masses now.
Yeah.
So thinking where you started that movie 4 years ago, I mean, do you see augmented reality filmmaking, the big convergence coming?
You can imagine how I feel seeing what I was thinking to be in the movie. It was actually happening in a reality 4 years later.
They look back in time and say, wow, Demi was really ahead of his time.
Cutting edge.
You were ahead of your time.
many of us know those things, and we can feel it, because we are very intuitive species, very creative. Imagination is one of the perks that we have as a species as well, and we all know it. The difference between some of us, I guess, is just nurturing that imagination and putting it to paper or into movies. So that's where the creatives such as yourselves and all the filmmakers and creatives around the world are differentiating from everybody else. We have that talent of creativity and storytelling. It's just nurturing it and encouraging it ourselves, if not our parents when we're little, at least ourselves, and following our dreams, which are one thing that nobody can take from us, right? And not yet, which
exactly
will be something that we can talk about a little bit down the track in terms of in terms of dream capturing and a connection between people using devices that you know, it's called telepathy in some way, but not the natural way, the technology way.
That sounds like it would be a whole nother podcast episode, I think.
Yeah.
But Dimmy, I wanted to thank you for coming on. This was amazing. Did you guys have any additional follow-ups
for
Dimmy? Yeah, Dimmy, this was awesome. I think the audience, you know, are the filmmakers that listen to this podcast are going to love you and love all the information you shared with us. Do you want to tell everybody where they can go connect with you online, how they become part of FGN, and to where they can find you on Twitter and your website and all that good stuff?
Mainly, yeah. If anyone wants to share their projects and share other articles that can help others, that's the twofold function for FGN Inc. on Facebook, is basically promote yourself within limits, you know, so you don't spam the group, but also share information that can help others. So that can happen if you Google, even go on Facebook, Filmmaker Generation Next or FGN Inc. You might end up on the two pages. One is the official page where you can like, you know, and from that page you can find the group, which you can join, request to join. There's three questions you can you'll be asked. It's mainly to get people engaged with why they involved with filmmaking, what they would change in the industry, and what was the movies they got inspired by, type of questions. Mm-hmm. It can be a little bit annoying when you want to join in and start sharing, but it's very, very useful to be able to answer those questions, to really help think about who I am as a filmmaker. If some people are not figuring it out yet, I'm still figuring it out myself. Also on Twitter, Filmmaker Generation Next, FGN Inc. Join up, and you'll probably see me on Facebook and Twitter. Any social media, just search for Dimmy Nakov and you'll find me. There is not one that I'm not part of.
Awesome, and we'll leave all the links to this on our blog, on our website at HecklerKane.com. So, Dimmy, thank you so much. You can go start your weekend now.
It was a pleasure talking with you.
Thank you so much, guys.
Thank you so much,
Dimmy. Have a great night. We'll be right back.